I never lived till I met you. I never loved till I met you. The soft melody of the old song reminded Nicole of another dance and another man. A member of European royalty, Genevieve's father. Julien Leclerc misread her body language and pulled her closer to him. Nicole did not fight it. She was very tired, and if the truth were known, it had been a long time since she had been held by a man. And it felt good. Nicole kept her promise to her daughter. When Monsieur Leclerc had finished his short set of songs, Nicole had approached him and given him Genevieve's message. Julien had then offered Nicole his arm, and the two of them had been dancing ever since. Julien was a handsome man in his early 30s, but not really Nicole's type. Too conceited. He talked about himself all the time. But, Nicole reasoned, he's all right as a dancer, and it beats twiddling my thumbs. At a break in the music, Francesca came over to talk to them. Good for you, Nicole, she said with an open smile. I'm glad to see you're enjoying yourself. She extended a small tray with half a dozen dark chocolate balls. These are fantastic, Francesca said. I made them myself, especially for the Newton crew. Nicole took one of the chocolates and popped it into her mouth. It was delicious. Now I have a favor to ask, Francesca continued. Since I was never able to schedule a personal interview with you, and all our mail indicates that there are millions of people who would like to know more about you, could you come over to our studio here and give me 10 or 15 minutes before midnight? Oh, yes, you must, Julien Leclerc added. The press always talks about the mysterious lady cosmonaut. Why not, Nicole finally decided. At least by doing it here, I don't have to involve Dad and Genevieve. Nicole waltzed into the studio, and by the time she sat down beneath the Klieg lights, she felt almost heady. Francesca's first question was innocent enough. She asked Nicole if she was excited about the coming launch. Of course, Nicole answered. Francesca then asked her to describe her role in the mission, what she expected to discover, and how she happened to go to the Space Academy in the first place. Nicole felt comfortable. It seemed to her that she and Francesca had fallen into a complementary rhythm. Francesca next asked two personal questions, one about Nicole's father, the other about her mother and the Senufo people of the Ivory Coast. They were both easy to answer, so Nicole was totally unprepared for Francesca's last question. Who's your daughter Genevieve's father? Nicole felt her heart rate surge. For a moment, she was afraid she was going to cry. You stupid woman! You should have known better, she thought to herself, as she struggled to contain her anger and her pain. She stared angrily at Francesca. I don't want to talk about it, Nicole said finally. The interview is over. Nicole stood up, realized that she was trembling, and sat down again. The cameras were still rolling. She breathed deeply for several seconds. Then she rose and walked out of the studio. She left the gala as soon as she was able to arrange transportation back to Rome. Of one thing she was absolutely certain. There had been something unusual and very powerful in that chocolate ball she had eaten. She had never before come so close to completely losing control of her emotions. Back at the hotel, Nicole quickly prepared for bed. Just as she was ready to turn out the light, she thought she heard a light knock on the door. Who's there? She called out. She heard a scraping sound and saw a piece of folded paper slide under the door. She picked it up. On it, in the original Senufo of her mother's people, were three words. Pronata, Ome, here. She opened the door to an ancient, wizened man in a full-length, bright green robe. His face was painted in green and white horizontal streaks. Ome, Nicole said. Her heart threatened to jump out of her chest. What are you doing here? She added in Senufo. The old Senufo chieftain said nothing. He held out a small vial and a polished white stone in his right hand. After several seconds, he stepped deliberately into Nicole's room. Standing in the center of the room, the old man looked up at the ceiling and began to chant. It was a Sanufo ritual song, a general blessing and spell invocation used by shamans for hundreds of years to ward off evil spirits. When he had finished the chant, the old man Ome looked again at his great-granddaughter and began to speak very slowly.
Renata, he said. Ome has sensed strong danger in this life. It is written in our chronicles that the man of three centuries will chase the evil demons away from the woman with no companion. But Ome cannot protect Renata after Renata leaves the kingdom of Minowe. Here, he said, taking her hand and placing the vial and the stone in it. This stays with Renata always. The water from the Lake of Wisdom can help Renata. Renata will know the time to drink.
Ome tilted his head back and earnestly repeated the chant, this time with his eyes closed. Then he abruptly turned and walked out the door. The Newton military and scientific ships, having made their voyage from Earth separately, united in deep space, and the combined spacecraft maneuvered so that Rama filled the viewport in the control center. The alien space vehicle was immense. Its surface was a dull gray, and its long body was a perfect cylinder. Nicole stood beside Valerie Vorsoff in silence. Together, they savored the view of Rama.
Have you detected any differences between this ship and Rama 1? Nicole asked at length.
Not yet, Commander Vorsoff replied. It looks as if the two of them came off the same assembly line.
A small flying craft like a bat or a hummingbird, then another suddenly zoomed past the viewport.
The exterior drones will confirm the similarities, Vorsoff remarked. Each of them carries a set of images from Rama 1. Any variations will be logged and reported within 3 hours.
And if there are no unexplained variations?
Then, said Borsov, we proceed as planned. We dock, open up Rama, and release the interior drones, all of which should take place about 22 hours from now, provided the life science officer certifies that the crew is ready.
The crew is in fine shape, Nicole reported. I've just finished looking at a synopsis of the health data. It's been surprisingly regular.
So, physically, we're all ready to go, the commander said thoughtfully. But what about our psychological readiness? Are you at all troubled by the recent spate of arguments we've had? Or can we chalk it up to tension and excitement?
We knew there was tension between David Brown and Reggie Wilson even before launch, Nicole replied.
We solved it for a time by assigning them to separate ships. But now that the team is all together again, they seem to be at each other constantly. I tried to talk to Wilson, Vorsoff said. He wouldn't discuss it, but it's clear he's very angry about something.
Nicole hesitated for a moment, then said cautiously, I wouldn't put Wilson and Brown together on any sub-team, at least not in the first sortie. I would place no other limitations of any kind on this crew.
Good, good, the commander said. I appreciate your report, and not just because it confirms my own opinions. Now, I have a different kind of question. Francesca came to me this morning and suggested we have a party. What do you think?
It's not a bad idea, Nicole replied. What kind of party did you have in mind?
A dinner, all together, here in the control room. Some wine, some vodka, maybe even a little entertainment. I'm asking your professional opinion, you understand.
General, Nicole said with a laugh, I see no reason to object. Nicole walked down the hall of the living area, and as she passed Janosch Tabori's room, she heard his unmistakable laugh through the open door.
Really, Janosch was saying, did you expect me to trade bishops and leave your knights in command of the center of the board? Come on, Shig!
Tabori and Takagishi were involved in their usual after-dinner chess match. Nicole stuck her head in the door.
Come in, beautiful, Janosch said with a grin.
As Nicole started to explain that she was on her way to the exercise room, a strange elfin creature leapt past her. When the creature saw Nicole, it jumped up from the floor and hovered at eye level for several seconds.
I see pop, fella,
the creature said.
I've not seen thee before.
It was a robot. Nicole was dumbfounded.
Would you please tell me what is going on here? She asked. It's Wakefield, Janosch said. The man is absolutely brilliant. He's also a Shakespeare fanatic. He has a whole family of these little guys, although I think Puck is the only one that flies.
Puck doesn't fly, Richard Wakefield said as he entered the room. He's only capable of hovering, and only for a short period. Wakefield seemed embarrassed.
Very impressive, Nicole said to Wakefield. His smile showed that he appreciated the compliment.